Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 797. It's the 9th of June 2017. On the podcast today, I have Toby Haywood, Chief Executive Officer of Red Leopard Holdings, RLH, and he talks about recent news and their plans going forward for investment. Plus, I have Russ Mould, Investment Director at AJ Bell. That's the stockbroker AJ Bell. And Russ talks about the general election and the following stocks: Burford Capital, that's BUR, Somero, SOM, and Free Agent, ticker there is Free. Plus, I also have Chris Bailey, the founder of FinancialOrbit.com, talks about AutoTrader, CMC Markets, and Petrofrac. And as normal, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs via Vox Markets in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Toby Haywood, Chief Executive Officer of Red Leopard Holdings. That's RLH, ticker. Toby, thank you for joining me.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. Thank you very much for allowing me to spend some time to talk about Red Leopard on this forum.
Yeah, well, listen, you've been on my radar for a while. There's quite a bit of interest on social media about you. But for people not aware of what you're all about, Toby, can you explain what the business is all about and what you hope to do?
Yes, and Red Leopard is classified as an investment company under the AIM rules. It's a company in which recently some individuals have subscribed for new shares and put cash in the company. And also there's been some conversion of warrants, which has put cash in the company, which has given us a small but strong balance sheet in which to go out and make acquisitions. And that's currently what we're searching for at the moment. We are in a relatively advanced stage with a number of different companies, and our principal focus at the moment is in the resource sector, of which I and some of my board colleagues have considerable experience in.
We believe at the moment
that the resource sector is in a very good position, although the commodity prices are relatively low. The cost base associated with exploiting those resources has also come down considerably, and we will be looking at companies that can rapidly achieve revenue or will rapidly be profitable, even at the relatively low resource prices we're looking at the moment, then we believe that's a terrific platform for a business to grow in the future and to bring considerable growth to the shareholders of Red Leopard.
Yeah, and you talk about resources, are you looking at certain areas at the moment, or is it a broad? I mean, do you see value in certain areas and sectors or what?
Well, I think when we talk about resources, I have experience in the oil and gas sector, and other members of the board have considerable experience in the in other commodities. So we have the ability to look through and assess utilizing the different facets of the board to look at different commodities. So we haven't actually pinpointed one yet. But we have, as I say, several companies that we're in relatively advanced stages of, and we're highly confident that we'll get a transaction done in the near future.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said there, you've obviously got a bit of confidence in the company, because I saw quite a few people sort of retweeting the fact that you'd bought shares in the open market. Was it yesterday, I think? Was it this morning?
It was announced yesterday that myself and Thomas Hoyer, one of the new non-executive directors who joined the board just recently in the last few days, have both acquired 15 million shares at 0.34 penny, which is, I've been wanting to acquire shares in this company for some considerable time, but unfortunately we had to put out our preliminary results first in order to ensure that we were not in a closed period. So once we've put those results out, then I use that as an opportunity immediately to acquire some shares from myself, and Thomas indeed did exactly the same thing.
Excellent stuff. And so, as far as yourself is concerned, it's nice to know you did mention that you had experience in oil and gas, and you also mentioned Thomas there. So, give us a bit more colour on the backgrounds of you and Thomas, if you would, please, Toby.
Yes, I mean, I started my career in investment banking, and for the sort of last 10 years, I worked in a finance house in both Canaccord and Jefferies, where I was responsible for listing and raising finance and structuring and advising in the oil and gas sector, and to a certain amount in the natural resource sector. Thomas has more experience in other commodities apart from oil and gas, but we as a board have a very good combination of differing skills, which will ensure that we, when we're assessing targets, we will ensure that we acquire a company that we believe will maximize returns for shareholders. We're not interested in size for size sake. We're not interested in just acquiring a deal in order to do a deal. We want to make sure that any deal we do maximizes returns for shareholders. And I should also emphasize that, you know, the deals we are keen to do and looking at are of a reasonable scale. We do not want to end up as a small cap AIM company. So the ambition is to acquire something of scale which can rapidly come through to revenues. We want to eliminate some of the risk which is involved with natural resources. So we want a company that's readily can readily move to production and revenues and profit.
Excellent. And as far as, you know, geographically, are you looking at UK, further seas, Europe or Africa, or where?
Our focus at the moment is in Central and Southern America and also in Africa. So, you know, it's a broad area, but those are the areas where the companies which are under review we're looking at. But you know, you have to be careful in natural resources, and this is where our experience is very useful, is ensuring that the jurisdiction in which we operate is as stable as we can possibly achieve, to ensure that we are eliminating as much risk as possible to the successful growth of this company.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's some amazing resources around the world, but if you're operating in a jurisdiction where the government, you know, are not going to help you, you know, once you've started pulling that out of the ground, then it's of no value to anyone, is it really? So, well, that's a very important point.
No, I mean, it's well known that a lot of natural resources are contained in countries where for all sorts of reasons, it's not very favourable for people to go and to exploit them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it is as important that you get the right countries, you get the right resource.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I know you can't say too much, but I mean, hopefully, ideally, what kind of timescale are you looking at to announcing some kind of deal? Going, well, you know, where would, I mean, what's too far away? What's sort of possible? You know.
Yes, I mean the Red Leopard is a company that has a window of opportunity at the moment, which we have to complete the acquisition within. The company will be that runs out in August. After that, the company continues to be listed for further 6 months. So we are very focused on a deal in the short term.
Yeah.
There is no consideration given to deals that will take a long time to conclude, either because the vendors are difficult or there's additional work to be done. For whatever reason, we are looking at transactions which are relatively straightforward and have the ability to be done in a short time scale. It's absolutely essential for us.
Okay, yes. Well, it's always good to have a deadline, and work to a deadline sometimes, isn't it? You know,
I think it is. It sounds strange, but it immediately, you know, some of the companies we see, they talk about things they're going to do over the next 6 months, and then we'll talk, and we can immediately eliminate that. It does focus our own planning on getting companies that, you know, are deliverable to our shareholders in a short time scale.
Yeah, well, even on a personal level, I know people probably same experience. When you know you have to get something done by a certain time, you get it done, you know, and
exactly.
It moves it forward. Okay, so if someone's listening right now, Toby, and they like the sound of this, but they're not following you on Vox Markets, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, I think to summarise, you know, some of the points that I've raised, the first one is shareholder returns. We are we are very focused on the returns to shareholders. And, you know, I myself have bought a considerable stake in this company at the around about the current price. I will only do transactions, or only will complete transactions, I believe, bring a substantial return to the shareholders at the current share price level. The second one is timing. We talked about it just now. This is not a company where you will be investing for a long period of time. We anticipate completing a transaction in a relatively short time scale. And the final one is risk. We are doing our utmost to eliminate risk. So we are ensuring that the company, the assets, the management, everything is done to minimize risk, because there are risks associated with the resource sector. We are very well aware of those as a board, and we are doing everything we can to minimize that, the potential risks that sit with resource companies.
Excellent. Toby, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll speak again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
I'm all right, yeah. I was up early, as always, this morning, watching the election. And I gather you up too early.
I was,
well.
Yeah. I've got a few suitcases under the eyes rather than the usual bags this morning. But yeah, I got up about 3:30 to catch up on events. And I'm glad I did, because obviously it wasn't boring, so by any stretch of the imagination.
No, exactly. But I just think, you know, I said an early guess. I mean, Theresa May is a cold lady, not very personable, didn't engage with the electorate, really, or anyone, you know? Whereas Jeremy Corbyn came into his own, he really sort of warmed people, even when he didn't like his policies or not. I did warm to him, you know?
I think he came across as a man who believed what he was saying, and he was firm on his principles. And I think, by contrast, Theresa May came across as somebody who was prepared to bend and blow in the wind a little bit. And I'm a history graduate by training, and therefore I'm very well aware that in 1929, stay with me, there is a moral to this. Yeah. Stanley Baldwin, the Tory Prime Minister, came out with a riveting election campaign slogan of safety first. And he got absolutely slaughtered, and actually ended up losing to what became a minority Labour government, interestingly. And I think that strong and stable wasn't an awful lot more inspiring than safety first. So there may be an uncanny echo there. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, but ironically, though, you know, strong and stable turned into be sort of weak and wobbly. It was like a U-turn here. She didn't want to speak to anyone for fear of being, you know, looking silly in the press and all that. Didn't engage with anyone. I just thought, so we're going to hang Parliament. And I did see a tweet out earlier on from you, Russ, saying lessons from 2010. Do you have any of those to bring to mind? Can you think of any?
Yeah, no, I can. Yeah, I mean, if you just look at what happened back in 2010, I mean, the market went down, using the FTSE 100 as a benchmark, as a chair, went down about 2.5% on the day after that result. When everybody was going, oh, crikey, now what does this mean? Then rather naughtily, it went up 5.2% on the Monday when Gordon Brown resigned, which obviously was a bit of a smack in the face for him, poor chap. And then by the time that Cameron and Clegg had cobbled their coalition together on the 12th of May, nearly a week afterwards, the index had actually gained 2.3% overall on the FTSE 100. Now, the index then wobbled in the summer, because we got the first rumblings of the European debt crisis. So you always got to be aware in mind there are other things going on in the background. But a year after the poll, the market was up 14%. But again, just think of the economic background. You were coming out of the global financial crisis, and earnings and cash flow and dividends were going better. Mm-hmm. You had the Bank of England at full tilt with record low interest rates and quantitative easing doing its absolute best, and indeed the Federal Reserve and Bank of Japan doing the same. So the economic and market backdrop was relatively benign, I think it's fair to say. And that's what we've always got to remember. And I know we're going to talk about stocks a little bit in a minute, but if anybody is looking at specific companies, then I think the question you've got to ask yourself today is, does a minority government, a hung parliament, or whatever it happens to be, mean that this company is going to sell less or more of its goods and services and at a price lower or higher than it would like to?
Yeah,
because in the end, for all the concern, is it going to stop people having a bet tomorrow or having a drink or a pint or buying a pullover? You know, that's for you to decide. All right, if the government's your customer, then, you know, there may be some issues to think about, because, you know, if you're waiting for a regulatory driver for your business to kick in, we don't know whether the Chancellor of the Exchequer is going to be the same or whatever it happens to be. So there are certain things that, from a government perspective, may be put on ice for a bit. We don't know. And there's clearly going to be some horse trading and compromising policy-wise. But for an awful lot of companies, in terms of their overall business model, is it going to really make a fundamental difference? And that's the question that investors need to ask themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember, who is it? Is it, what's that guy? What's the guy? Mad Money in America. What's his name? Jim Cramer. Jim Cramer, yeah. And he said something about that. He said, you know, how does this going to affect, and he mentioned one of the companies and the sales of this company, something going on. And he says, no, and it's the same as Warren Buffett, you know, never really pays attention. He looks at the companies and he thinks, will this company's earnings be the same whether the stock market closes down in 5 years' time, you know, and like Coca-Cola or something? And he says, yes.
It's not easy to do when share prices are moving around to keep your calm. But I think that's generally the best thing to do. And I know it sounds mad that I'm going to sit, you know, I'm working for a stockbroker. But, you know, again, the message is, if in doubt, do nothing, because otherwise you are going to potentially second guess what politicians are going to do. And given all the compromises and horse trading that's coming up, they might know what's coming out of it. So if they don't know, you don't know. And therefore, your chances of getting it wrong are increased. And then you're going to be incurring commissions, stamp duty, possibly some tax. So, you know, if in doubt, think very, very carefully. Do nothing is probably your first reaction. Do nothing is probably your second. And if then you're convinced that there's a need to act, then okay, then fine. But again, please consider you will be incurring costs, which maybe you're frankly better off avoiding.
Yeah, and do you know what? I've often said...
frankly, you will be better off avoiding.
Yeah. But do you know what? I mean, when it comes to betting, right, I don't bet hardly at all, but when you see a foregone conclusion in the eyes of the bookies, always bet against them. It's always worth doing that. I remember a couple of months back when they had Jeremy Corbyn with no chance of winning whatsoever, and also Brexit, and loads of things, Trump winning. You know, it happens all the time. When there's a two-horse race especially, or close to a two-horse race, and, you know, there's one clear loser, bet with a loser, go with a loser, and you'll always get a good chance of beating the bookies, basically, you know.
Well, then I think you're making a value, there's an element of sort of behavioral finance and market psychology in that, but you're also making a valuation call. You're just saying, look, okay, I think this chap might lose, but look at the odds that are available on him. For goodness sake, you know, a horrible defeat is clearly priced in already. So if there's any chance of any surprise, it's got to be on the upside. And I think, you know, that's kind of how value investors will look at stocks, for example. Yeah. It's what's price, you know. Yet now, in the end, a value investor will always fight shy of a bad company, because time is working against you if it's a bad company, and if it's a good company, time is always working for you. And generally, balance sheet is a key determinant there. If the balance sheet's a Swiss cheese and is shot to bits, then time is always working against you. So in that respect, you're always going to be careful. But yeah, there will be times when, to be fair, coming into this today, I thought, I know the FTSE 100's up 1%, but I always thought it was going to be difficult for the market to make massive gains, because if the Tories cleaned up, that was kind of what was expected anyway. Mm-hmm. And if Labour got in, then there'd be uncertainty of whether they would go ahead with some of the things which markets might not like to see, like corporate tax increases and some nationalisation programmes. Now, there were some sectors I think would have benefited from Labour getting in. Renewables, green, for example, would have definitely been one, I think, for certain. But nevertheless, I think, again, in terms of the value of the call there, I think a lot of the good news was in the price of the FTSE and not most of the bad. But what we're seeing right now is this mechanical trade that we've seen very much since the referendum last year. Pound down, FTSE 100 up, with dollar earners, multinationals and miners and overseas players leading the way, and the domestic stocks, the retailers, the banks, the house builders, the discretionary players like media, they're the ones who are getting hammered today. And, you know, any fund manager or any private investors, again, still facing the question they've now faced for the last 6, 9, 12 months: are the multinational dollar earners overpriced, having done really well, or are they going to keep on going? Or are the domestic players, which have been downtrodden and lagged, are they now oversold and cheap because everybody's so down on them? And I think that's going to be the key question for the next, you know, 6, 12 months and beyond.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's move on to some specific stocks. So what do you got there, Russ?
Well, we're going to look at three today. We've looked at them all before, so kind of updates. Burford Capital, Somero Enterprises, and Free Agent.
Yeah, Burford Capital's ticker there is BUR, isn't it? Burr.
It is, Burr, yeah. And it's gone up by a third since we first looked at it in March, so that could have been worse. And in fact, it's now trading at nearly 10 quid, having been just £2 a share in January 2016. So that naturally makes you think, oh, God, I've missed this one. And to be, you know, it's on a forward earnings multiple of 20 with a yield of less than 1%. It's a lumpy business, and it's not a very high transparency business. And for those of you who don't know it, it's a provider of finance for litigation, for lawsuits, both prosecution and now actually defence. Mm-hmm. It gets a percentage of the winnings of the prosecution and a percentage of the money saved on a successful defence. And it will also actually sell on its stakes in cases when they're in progress if it feels it can make a profit. So it's lumpy because you don't know when the lawsuits are going to finish, and it's low transparency because obviously they're a bit reluctant to tell you what they're doing because, you know, the customer doesn't want that. So for those of you who don't like paying high multiples for lumpy and low transparency businesses, there's another way of looking at Burford, which it actually has three quoted bonds on the London Stock Exchange's order book for retail bonds. It's just issued a third bond. It's raised 175 million quid at a 5% coupon. And what I think looks to have happened is, to make way for the new bond, maybe some investors have knocked out the old ones. Because if you look at, so you've got BER 1, BER 2 and BER 3 are the tickers.
Yeah.
BER 1 has got a 2022 maturity, BER 2 2024 and BER 3 2026. Now the one in the middle, BER 2, is the one that looks interesting. It originally came with a 6 1/8 coupon. And the bonds are trading at 108.5. So they're going to redeem at 100, yeah? So for every bond you get, you buy now, you're going to lose 8.5p in capital. Yeah. But you're getting the 6 1/8 coupon, that's 6.125p for every bond that you buy. So if you adjust for the capital loss, your yield to maturity is still 4.8% a year.
Yes.
Now, if you're looking at the new bond that's just come out, that's got two more years to mature, and it's yielding 4.85% to maturity. So for 2 years less risk, you're getting an almost identical yield. And frankly, 4.8% yield, any income hunters out there might be thinking, yeah, there are frankly worse things to do for a company that's extremely profitable, does generate cash. The caveat is this is unrated paper because it's a retail bond. It doesn't have a rating agency rating attached to it. And it will be fairly junior paper. So if, heaven forbid, something does go wrong, you'll be low down the pecking order of creditors. But if something does go wrong, then I don't think the share price will stick around at £9.70 for very long either. And there'll be an awful lot more pain on the equity side. So if you do like the story, and let's face it, litigation is pretty much uncorrelated to any other business that you can think of, maybe you might think the bonds are one way of looking at this stock. And if you want to really finesse it, maybe the middle one, the BER 2, for risk-reward relative to maturity and time of redemption, probably offers a bit better risk-reward than the BER 1 or the BER 3, which has just come out.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll be a bit more imaginative on those names, but obviously not.
You'd like to think, obviously, yeah, and to be fair, BER 2 is easier to say than the 6th and 1/8 coupon 2024, isn't it?
But yeah,
It's all relative. So I'm sorry that's a bit technical, but you know, for anybody who's a little bit of a nervous disposition, is looking for some yield, but from an interesting company, might be one way of going about it.
Marvellous. Okay.
And it's tradable in £100 denominations as well, by the way, so that's right. No bad thing.
Okay, what's the next one, Russ?
Somero Enterprises, SOM on AIM, and we looked at it in late March, and the shares have frankly done absolutely zilch since then. Well, they went up, and they've just come back to around the 300p mark, and frankly, the trading statement that came out early this week was a little bit disappointing for Choice. It's actually a Fort Myers, Florida-based company. It's an engineer, and it's got this very interesting technology, a laser technology, that allows it to make sure that concrete for flooring and buildings is absolutely dead flat.
Yeah, I've seen that. Go to the website. If you like little sort of gadgets, you see these little machines that just level off this with. And it's brilliant.
It's fascinating. But since we mentioned that the shares had gone up, I think helped by the Trump bump, because obviously people were looking at US infrastructure spending and put this as a stock in there, which is one of the reasons why we flagged it. Now, clearly we're looking at a bit of a Trump slump in a minute, because the Donald's not getting very far with anything he wanted to do, and he's involved in this wrestling match with the FBI, which is all looking a little bit grubby as well. Yeah. So we've had the numbers come out, our trading statement at the annual general meeting, and the company did launch a 10.3 pence a share special dividend, which is not to be sniffed at. Yeah. But in terms of trading, they did say that trading actually has been slower than expected in China, and also in America. Now, they blamed the weather in the US because there was that nasty storm on the eastern seaboard back in the spring, but I never really like companies getting too hoity-toity about the weather, because it always seems a bit of an excuse to me. And they also do blame political uncertainty, with which you've got a little bit more sympathy, because Trump was promising great things and hasn't actually doled out anything yet. But if you look at the company's history, it's generally done pretty well without major US infrastructure stimulus, so that's a good sign. And its European business is ticking along okay. So it's probably one to kind of, you know, hold if you've got it, keep an eye on it. It's only on 14 times forward earnings with a 3% yield. If you chuck in the special dividend, then the dividend yield's nearer 6, which frankly is no bad thing. You've got to be on the register on the 28th of July, to get that special dividend on the 14th of August. So it's a watching brief. The European business is going well, which I think could be the positive surprise, because nobody expected anything good to come out of Europe's economies this year, and lo and behold, it is doing. Mm-hmm. But the US is clearly, sentiment-wise, going to be important for the stock, and that means the Donald's got to pull his finger out and start getting something achieved.
Yeah, it's tricky that on the chart. I mean, do you know what? It's a cracking run. It's a cracking run from from the last couple of years. It's gone up nicely, and but it's touched what's called a moving average there, 125 moving average, a couple of times, and it's done that recently. And it very rarely does that. When it does that, it normally bounces off that. But
what happens this time.
Yeah, as it hasn't bounced. Okay, what's the last one there, Ross?
And the last one is Free Agent. Free, again, quoted on AIM, and this is a share price chart that probably will make your teeth ache a little bit. It's not the prettiest. The shares have gone down since we first looked. They've been February from 120p to 100.
I had these on my watch list, and I got an, with Vox, when you put them on the watch list, you get an RNS by notification.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got this, and I thought, why are they on my watch list? And that's, I realise now you've flagged them up. Well, obviously, something about them I quite liked, but
They provide software as a service to small companies to help them with with their digital accounting. And so you think, well, this is quite interesting, because obviously we had the then government, or could still be our government, saying that it's going to introduce a digital tax economy by 2020, and clearly sole traders and small companies are going to need some help with that. And lo and behold, that's exactly what Free Agent provides, either directly through its website or through accountants as our channel partners. The company's just published some full year numbers on the 6th of June, which were well flagged back at the time of the November IPO, and they were bang in line. Sales up 44%, customers up to 50,000, 82% gross margin, rising recurring revenues. But the share price is it has gone down since we first discussed it. It's still above the IPO price, but I think the reason largely is that Chancellor George Osborne introduced this digital tax deadline of April 2018. Spreadsheet Phil came in and pushed that back to April 2019 for companies with less than £85,000 of BISO. So in that respect, the regulatory driver has eased slightly. Yeah. And clearly now we're working out, well, A, who's going to be Chancellor of the Exchequer, B, who's going to be the government, and C, what they're going to do with the digital tax plan. So going back to where we came earlier, look at companies. Mm-hmm. Does the government mean an awful lot to their business? And in this case, it's one that it does, because that is a big regulatory driver. I like regulatory drivers for businesses, because it generally means the customers have got no option but to fork over the cash. But this one hasn't been introduced yet. They do have a partnership with RBS, which is potentially very helpful for them. And if the digital tax drive kicks off, it's clearly going to be potentially positive. There are apps out there that do this as well. There's one called Expenses, I think, which is quite well established. So it's not as if they've got the feel to themselves. But if the digital tax drive kicks off, they're in a good place. But clearly at the moment, anything to do with UK government,
Do you know what?
Yeah, see exactly. What happens.
I've just noticed on Twitter there was sparked up that May does intend to form a new government despite losses. She's on the way to Buckingham Palace. She's going to Buckingham Palace, apparently.
I think to be fair, she'll probably take the view that the vote that they got is as high as it's been for several elections in percentage terms.
Yeah,
and she'll probably take the view that, frankly, if she goes now, then things are confusing as it is, and if you have promised strong and stable government, then resigning at the first sign of trouble probably isn't the way of going about it. But I suspect that clearly questions will be asked within her own party, and it's not the most forgiving of parties historically when their leaders haven't delivered. Yeah. So I think she'll have to come up with some, pretty strong signs of progress on what she thinks is the key issue, Brexit, to reassure her own party and voters that she is the right lady for the job long term.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if I was them, I'd suggest maybe pick a human who enjoyed speaking to humans.
I think, to be fair, I think the one thing that you mentioned it at the start, and again, this isn't taking a party political view on behalf of myself or my employer or you. Mm. I live in Brighton Pavilion, by the way, so my MP is green, so I just live in an outlier. Yeah. But what I would say from a Theresa May perspective is, if a CEO of a company ran away and hid like she'd done, I think she'd get an awful lot of grief.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think if your name's on the door, and you've called the election and it's a vote on you, then you've got to turn up and do the bizzo. And I think the fact that she hid, I think, was a vote loser for her, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, yeah. And also, be honest, there's two sides of the sort of seesaw here, because, Corbyn, impressed on a personal level. He did chat to people, and he seemed like a genuine sort of guy, you know. Whereas she was the opposite, and so she fed him really, you know. And so there we are.
These perceptions matter. In politics, they really, really do. Whether again it will impact company profits and cash flows remains to be seen. But you know, we will find out in the fullness of time.
Marvellous, Russ. Well, maybe this time next week we'll have
a
government.
A bit more. We might not. We'll find out.
Yeah, or another general election. Who knows?
God, no. Please, no.
I know. I'm worn out with it. Cheers, Russ. Speak next week.
I look forward to it. Take care now.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is founder of FinancialOrbit.com, Chris Bailey. Thanks for coming on, Chris.
Hello, Justin. Yeah, thanks very much. How are you?
Good, thanks. I've been up very early, and I'm pretty much electioned out already. And so I'm going to make a plea here, Chris, and we try and keep it. I know it's hard, because we do touch on topical things a lot, but try and make it election-free zone and just focusing on a couple of companies.
There's far too much political chat and whatever. We'll see what will be. Absolutely. Let's talk about a couple of companies, Justin. Look, if you look at the economy today, you think about big discretionary spending, you know, outside of the property market and housing and everything, you've got to say autos and car purchasing has got to be right up there. Mm-hmm. And so it's absolutely fascinating that auto traders come out with their numbers today, which actually look pretty good. Operating profits up 18%, margins up as well, debt down, raising the dividend, returning cash to shareholders. What more could people want? And yet the shares, as we speak at the moment, are down 3-odd%. And people are probably wondering, you know, what have they got to do in order to push their share price up? But of course, the reality is, as you know, you and I have talked plenty of times, the stock market is it looks ahead, it looks forward. It's a discounting mechanism. And the reality is that auto traders, they've done very well. They've had fabulous integration and engagement in their websites. They pushed their business on very nicely since they IPO'd a couple of years ago. But the reality is, it's up with events. And you can tell that actually by a really interesting bit of data that they included in their results. They bought back a bunch of stock, about £100 million worth of shares. And what price do they buy them at? An average price of 388 pence. Now, if you look at the share price chart, you can see that stock has been getting very nice support about that 375 pence level. And that's obviously the company stepping in and buying back shares. And my view would be, particularly given it's a big discretionary spend and who knows what the economy might be like going forward, I think the reality is great company, more than up with events. It's travelled hopefully, it's arrived with its results. Frankly, everything's in the price and a bit more.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I bought into these not soon after they floated. My father sort of is in this car game, and you know he swears by auto trader. And I think it's like you can liken it to Rightmove. You know, there are some competitors out there, but this is the first place you'll go to. They are the market leader by far. You know, and but you pay for that. A hefty kind of premium there for the shares, isn't there? But like I said, they're never going to have a disastrous year, because unless the whole industry has a disastrous year. But like you say, they're up there, and I would wait now. It's tried to hit that £4.40 level, tried to break that a couple of times, it failed, and again, like it's tried to do that. So the support level, like you said, is where they've been buying back shares.
Yeah,
so wait for it to come back.
That's it. That tells you everything you need to know. The thing is, you're absolutely right about the Rightmove kind of observation, because take a look at this stat. Advert views on their website per month increased a little bit to 247 million. 247 million a month. Unbelievable numbers. But there you go. Obviously, what they're saying about the future is, it's, as they say, an uncertain environment, but they're still confident. But yeah, I think you wait. And where the company is choosing to buy back shares, or actually, ideally, just a little bit above that, is where you should start considering it. And to me, you look at the charts, and that's in that 375, 385p sort of level.
So all that is, buy low, sell high. Okay. Like selling cars, essentially. Okay.
At least shares might be an appreciating asset, not a depreciating one, but there you go.
Yes, absolutely. Chris, anything else you're looking at?
Well, one other thing, CMC Markets came out as well. Now, you and I have touched on this one before. I think my observation previously was that they also had that very bad or difficult regulatory news in the whole sort of spread betting and related markets, CFD markets. And the shares went from 200p to 100p in double quick time at various parts of last year. They've sort of scrabbled back to about 125 pence now. So, you know, there's been a little bounce back off extremely sort of negative positioning. But the reality is, you can see it in the numbers today. Profits are down slightly. Yes, the customer base is going up, but the, you know, the key indication really is what they say about the regulatory change. And in essence, they're saying they provided responses, but they're still awaiting for the views of the regulators in countries like the UK and Germany. And as an investor, you see that and you think to yourself, you know, this is a material, potentially material impact on their business, and you act. Strong as IG Index, but they're a solid sort of tier two player and are a survivor in the wider scheme of things. But, you know, the key with investments is always making sure you're fully aware of as much news flow as possible. When you've got a big uncertain event like that, you just stay on the sidelines, in my view. You know, well done to anybody who bought them at 100 or pence and are sitting on a 25% profit. But frankly, there's a lot more people who are sitting on big losses because they held the shares at 200 pence plus from sometime last year. So I would chill on this one. Just await developments, see what the regulators say.
Yeah, I think, you know, with stocks and shares of that, is there's enough risk anyway to do your own research, and you've got to, you know, look at so many different things when you're researching a company, and so you can get it wrong, or you can be overly optimistic on something, or the company can be overly optimistic. There's so many areas where you could fall down in your research. So I think adding an extra level of risk like this is not really necessary. It's a 50-50, isn't it? And I think yeah. It's a gamble, essentially. So it's going from, you know, sort of investing and making a valid judgment to gambling. And so you're right, when you got a risk like this and you can take that risk out, why not just take it out and wait and see, you know? That's all right, I think. I mean, some people will like that added risk because they'll realise if the regulators come out with a sort of a lighter hand, as it were, then they may shoot up, you know? It may go the opposite way as well, you know?
Yeah. Precisely. And, you know, the whole point in investments, and I've seen this over 20 odd years, is that it's always better to react rather than try and predict or punt ahead of news.
Yes.
And sometimes you'll be unlucky and what your sort of gut instinct told you did work out and you would have made a bit more money. But I can tell you, for all of those times, there'll be two or three other occasions where awaiting developments and actually in an optimal way, kind of looking for where there's been some good news, which you understand as good news, and the market really hasn't taken that to the sort of the extreme, the level that news should warrant. And that's what you're looking for as an investor, that sort of anomaly opportunity where you've got insight, you can see the good news, you can see the reason why a share should be trading at a much higher level, but it isn't for whatever reason, because maybe other market participants are bored, not looking, misunderstanding something, not paying attention, whatever it might be. That's what you've got to look for. That's the quality way to play it. So on this one, wait for what the regulators say. Sure, you'll miss the first 5-odd%, but there may well be more to come. You know, on a similar front, look at, we talked about Petrofac a couple of weeks ago, yeah. And I said something very similar because there was a corruption inquiry ongoing. That share had another massive leg down since we had that chat. And they might be a little bit firm this morning on a contract update. But bottom line is, you don't need to be rushing into these things. Await the news on things like regulation and corruption inquiries and related.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, look at that chart from £9.50 down to £3.70. Yeah, it's
and, a heavy drop. Yeah. You know, as somebody once said to me, the bottom of the page is not the bottom of the chart. And, yeah. You know, that's a very wise saying. And too many less experienced investors, or even experienced investors, let's face it, fail to remember that. It's we all want to buy low and sell high, but sometimes wait for the news or the share to come to you. You know, trying to buy at the absolute bottom, that's a mug's game. Like trying to sell at the absolute top, because nobody's that clever. If they are, they're probably a fraudster.
Yeah. And zero is the bottom of the chart, by the way, if anyone's wondering. Chris, thanks for that, fella, and speak next week.
Absolutely, sounds good.
Okay, here are the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Echo Energy. At 4, Asian Met Resources. At 3, Boohoo.com. Boo is ticker there. Boo. At 2, Stellar Diamonds. And at number one, most followed company in the last 24 hours was Bell Zone Mining, BZM. And we covered up the chart yesterday with Nicola, of course. All right, top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours were, at five, Iron Ridge Resources, IRR. That's the Enchi-Prochi partnership goes unconditional. At four, Savannah Petroleum, SAVP, statement regarding suspension. At three, Management Resource Solutions, MRS, grant warrants and non-executive directors. At two, Aviva, AV dot, that is, holdings and company. Number one most liked RNS in the last 24 hours was from Asia Met Resources, ARS ticker. Asia Met expands footprint of high-grade polymetallic mineralization at BK District. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.